You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Good morning and welcome to Matinere on Air. There we go. Jane Matinere, Greg Buck, and Galen Butenoff coming to you live from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. You can call. You can text. The number is the same. 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream where my camera is finally working. On Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. He joined us a couple of months ago. He has a channel on YouTube called The Back 40. I highly encourage you to check it out. A farmer from southwestern Missouri, Will Westmoreland, is back. Good morning, Will. Thank you so much for being here. How are you?
It's great to be here. Hey, Jane. Hey, team.
Really?
I got to tell you, this is groundbreaking for me. This is my first repeat visit on a podcast.
We did it. We did it, folks.
We did it.
Hey, not just a podcast, but a live radio show, Will.
So that's right. Yeah,
welcome.
I'm excited.
And we're delighted to have you back. I thought our conversation last time, which, by the way, you can still find in our archives if you would like to hear our first conversation with Will. But you really went viral a couple of months ago, Will, when you had responded to a young farmer who had put out a TikTok who was very concerned. He had invested some money under the Biden administration into improvements for his farm, and then the Trump administration came in and froze all those payments. So you responded to him, and that just really kind of exploded. I'm curious what has happened since we talked to you last.
Well, so Skylar Holden was the farmer out of Jefferson County, I think it is. Anyway, up close to St. Louis. And yeah, Jane, what he had done is he had invested in farm improvements for rotational grazing by planting some warm weather grass seeds and putting up fencing and this type of thing. And then the government had come in and put a hold on that. Now, what's happened since then? Gosh, when we started this, I just thought, I hope she has a 2-hour radio show because it's going to take that long to, you know,
we
to talk
got plenty
about
of time.
Yeah. Okay. So those payments are still going out. They did release those payments, and Skylar was one of the first people to, they were very strategic, let's just put it that way, and how they distributed the dollars. There's no doubt that the people that were the loudest on social media got their checks first, and Skylar was one of those. And, so Skylar is still on his personal journey. I got to be honest with you. Once he got his money, a lot of the angst dried up.
Oh, around, I bet.
His concern with this administration, et cetera. But, you know, I mean, and I'm not trying to be cavalier about this, but, you know, with this tariff situation, we're winning some and we're losing some in terms of farmers. And for every one Skylar that goes back after they've kind of had an epiphany, there are, you know, three or four that aren't going back. They realize this is a long-term battle for rural America, and they're sticking to their guns on pushing back against these policies. That's good news. We got to take it where we can get it.
Yep, absolutely. Josh Hawley, your very own, Senator, Missouri Senator Josh Hawley, is applauding. This is from earlier this month on Fox 2, is applauding Donald Trump's sweeping plan for new tariffs, calling it a win for American workers, and urging continued protection for farmers and manufacturers. So if I take what you're saying, Will, not all farmers are like, this is a great thing, because we have had discussions with Wisconsin farmers as well, and in particular soybean growers. And the last time this happened under the Trump administration, and yes, he cut the farmers a big check because they were taking such a hit on this, but a lot of those markets never came back.
That's right. That's right. So I'd be remiss if I didn't go on the record to say that the closest Josh Hawley's ever come to a farm is when he goes up to the state fair every year and puts on his dusts his cowboy boots off and his Wrangler jeans and goes and gets the crease put in him at the laundromat and then goes to the state fair.
So nice.
Take it with a grain of salt. But yeah, to your point, the uncertainty is just, you know, collapsing in on itself. So you're going to be really hard pressed to find a farmer that says the tariffs are a good idea. The president's most ardent supporters in agriculture, the closest they'll come is they're still saying, well, I'm going to trust him that he knows what he's doing. So even though these tariffs are really bad and we're struggling, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt that in the long run, this is going to pay off. But Jane, that's a very, very small number of farmers that, you know, that still believe that way. If you talk to, I was just speaking to a friend of mine who works for a really large agricultural planning organization, PLANNING, and she's based in North Dakota. And she was just talking today about all of the farmers that live around here, her that do row cropping, are struggling with what to do. They're trying to plant crops that are going to get the most of, are going to get the most crop insurance because they don't know if there's going to be profitability in harvesting what they normally do. Number two, right now, as the markets were playing out this morning, there's still not a single crop that coming out of the ground pays for itself. So farmers are banking on these, you know, subsidies that may or may not come. We may get some subsidies this year because that money had already been set aside by Congress. But the big message coming out of the USDA is maybe you'll get 85% of what you were expecting and don't plan on anything going forward. We're going to cut all of that.
Well, how are, I mean, let me ask a very elementary question as I am not a farmer and my Wranglers are quite crisp as well. How do farmers survive and go on then? I mean, I guess the bigger question is, do you know any farmers who are looking to 5 years down the road saying, I think I know I have to shut this down because it will not be sustainable? I mean, it seems like they're giving them just a future of you're done and sorry, and hopefully the insurance pays off and see you later.
Yeah, there are quite a few farmers that will tell you that if things keep going the way they go, they're going now and that they're expected to go, that their farms are in danger. Now, you can't be a farmer without being hopeful. So I think that there are still a lot of farmers out there that are hoping at some point, you know, their senator, their congressperson in their state, somebody's going to set up, you know, and stand up. And at least at a minimum, they're going to get the bailout subsidies that they need, maybe just to keep the farm going. There won't be any profitability in that. They may take a hit. It may be really bad. But can we just survive until the end of this administration so that, you know, when things, quote unquote, get back to normal, we'll be okay? I think that's the key mentality out there right now. But absolutely, I've talked to all kinds of farmers that have said, I'm looking down the road, and if things don't change at all and we don't get subsidies and these programs don't pay out, it's going to be really bad. And their fear is, of course, consolidation, right? We've already seen that. In that row crop, you know, farming is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And you've got really powerful, large corporate ag interests that control, you know, everything from what gets planted to what gets sold and how. And we're even starting to see the first remnants of that now in beef as well because of, you know, China's recent actions on beef. And yeah, Jane, to your point, like before the first Trump administration, Brazil sold China 13% of their row crops. That's higher even now than when I came on the last time I told you it was at 43, in some cases is at 48 now. And to your point, that's never going to come back.
Right.
Where are we going to find those markets? You know,
and I guess,
I'm sorry, I went off on a little bit.
No, that's fine.
It's bad, guys. It's really bad.
Well, and I guess, well, that's where I don't understand with that portion who are still, well, it's bad. And this seems like a bad decision, but I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. At some point, don't you run out of those benefits?
Yeah, you will about harvest time. Not saying that, you know, to be funny, but yeah, you will about harvest time because right now, like I said, we, you know, corn seems to be the one thing for whatever reason. Maybe it's the subsidies to create more ethanols. Corn seems to be the one thing that everybody's running to right now because it looks like, not that it's going to be profitable at the harvest, but it's going to have the highest level of subsidy.
Yeah.
You know, through the crop insurance program, et cetera. So now we've got farmers out there that are growing food for the United States and the rest of the world that are not making those decisions purely based on supply and demand, but they're making them based on how much is the insurance going to pay off in the end.
And
that's just not where we want to be. You know,
I have to imagine if you spend a good amount of your life, I don't know, raising cows on a dairy farm to just switch to corn, that can't be the easiest and, might I say, inexpensive transition to make.
Yeah, and it's It's not if you haven't planned ahead for it.
Yeah.
But the bigger thing even that's happening out there is that some row crop farmers are starting to incorporate beef, you know, into raising cattle into their operation because our cattle herds are at a 70-year low, and that's kept prices high. So you've had some row crop farmers, you know, that have been, you know, putting in those grasses maybe where they would have planted a row crop before so that they can incorporate cattle into the overall model. But the problem with that is now he's making bad decisions that are impacting cattle. The Chinese just said, we're not going to buy $1.6 billion worth of American beef. And Jane, to your earlier point, just like they did with row crops, Australia immediately jumped in. Said, hey, we've got all the beef you need.
Yep.
And they're selling that. They replaced that market overnight. So it's just happening, you know, across the board. So everywhere the farmers are going to escape this or trying to change their plan, it's just that whack-a-mole from the administration with bad policy.
If you're just joining us, Will Westmoreland is our guest. He's the executive director of the Back 40 on YouTube. I highly encourage you to check out the Back 40. You'll learn a lot, and it's always – but again, it's – I didn't grow up a farmer. I grew up in a small town, and I think it's important we understand how these areas, especially the people who are feeding us,
yeah,
and what it is that they're dealing with. I'm curious, Will, now when we slide over a little bit to the immigration issue, what would it mean for farmers in your area if every immigrant was pulled off of the working farms? Would that be catastrophic or not?
It would be across the country. Where I live, we're kind of beef oriented. I grew up in like the second largest beef producing county in Missouri. And a lot of people don't know this, but Missouri is usually in the top three or four in regard to beef production. And a lot of that is family run. Beef seems to be the one area as of right now, like I said earlier, that hasn't gone into this, you know, horizontal growth pattern where big corporations are running everything. Now, once that beef leaves the farm, yes, it's all corporate.
Yep. But
anyway, to your point, but everywhere else in the country, yeah, it's a huge issue. So I've got family that owns a really large farm in Imperial Valley, California. We experienced this during COVID where we had crops rotting in the field because a lot of our migrant workers had gone back to their country of origination. 70% of the workers in agriculture are migrant workers and 50% are undocumented. So when the Trump administration did these raids early on, like in the San Joaquin Valley, et cetera, that led to a 75% reduction in attendance for people showing up on the farm. So the brief answer to your question is, yes, where immigrant labor is a big part of the agricultural picture, it's been devastating with attendance rates as low as 75%, crops rotting in the field, dairy milk not getting pumped, all kinds of things like that.
Well, and what I'm taking from the administration, apparently, is that all of the federal workers that they have been firing, I guess they should just be coming to work in the fields now, because where is this workforce going to come from? Where are these replacement workers going to come from?
That's our biggest fear at the Back 40, is that our 400 largest agricultural counties in this country are shrinking. Hospitals are going away. Schools are consolidating. Businesses are going away. The population overall is going away. Farmers are aging out. So that's our big concern. Like, we're not talking about someday rural America dying. It's happening right in front of us. And if we don't jump in now to fix the problem, it's going to be gone. And the people working those farms, to your point, are going to be the people that used to own them before corporations bought them out.
And that's something that I want to talk about as well, is the corporatization of farming in the United States. We're going to continue our conversation with Will Westmoreland. Check out the Back 40. That's his channel on YouTube. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. Stay close. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Good morning and welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, and our resident young person Calvin on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine, where you can always join us. Call or text, the number is the same, 855-752-4842. You can leave a comment as well if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Coming up after the 10:30 news, it is a segment that has turned into audio sorbet. We like to take a little breath, a little cleansing for your ears away from all the politics and all the other exhausting things. And we just try and lighten things up a little bit for the last half hour of the show. So we're going to talk about the latest inductees into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And everyone has one band they're ticked off isn't in there yet.
Oh, yes.
So we want to hear the band that you think is deserving and is still waiting to get into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And then we'll wrap up the show as we always do with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Today it is the Climb Every Mountain edition, so stay tuned for that. Right now, though, our guest is the executive director of the Back 40. That is his channel on YouTube. Will Westmoreland is here. He's a farmer in southwestern Missouri, and I'm so glad to have you back, Bill. Will, just to give us a little bit of an update from the last time you were on. The last time you were on, we were talking about the corporatization of farming. And under the first Trump administration, Sonny Perdue was the head of agriculture. And I remember this like it was yesterday when he told farmers essentially, go big or go home. So if you can't grow, if you can't continue to grow, we don't care if you go out of business. And that does still seem to be the same attitude now under Trump too.
Yeah, you know, he was actually standing right there near you in Wisconsin when he made those comments. And it was a dairy farmer that asked the question, and that was, hey, consolidation is just killing us. I mean, the big, you know, corporate dairy farms are the ones that have the most amount of security through subsidies and listed off these other things. And Sonny said, well, this is the United States of America. You either go big or you go out. And when the president was asked to clarify those comments a few weeks later, you know, he didn't say, no, Sonny's wrong. We need to protect the small farmer and rancher, and their policies kind of reflect that mentality. And Jane, you know, we didn't get to dig into this a lot the last time because we had that crisis of, you know, payments not going out. Yep. But corporatization is a big issue because now it's in every single level of agriculture. So you've got giant corporate ag that controls the seed market. You've got giant corporate ag that controls pesticides, fertilizers, fungicides. And now it's crept into farmland. So the USDA, they look every year and they talk about how much farmland is owned and operated by family farmers. But the problem is they measure that by, you know, does a family own the land? So they put out this report that says 95% of all U.S. farms in 2022 are family owned and operated. But then what that doesn't reflect is, yes, they're owned by a family, but not a family of farmers. So 40% of the farmland out there is owned by families, but it's not farmed by them. It's corporately owned by families, and they rent the land out to other farmers or to other corporations. So it's deceiving. It's deceiving because you think, well, 95% are still small farms and ranches. No, 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 no. That just means they're family owned. And you've got a lot of, and in some places like Iowa, not too far from you guys, well, closer to you, it's as high as 50%. So it really climbs up there, like half the land. Yes, it's owned by a family, but it's still put to corporate use. And then you've got these big companies like Nuveen and Acre Trader and Manulife. They're coming in and they're buying up large swaths of all kinds of land, not only land to plant row crops on, but, you know, land where we raise cattle. I'll give you guys a quick example. There's 180 acres that went on the market down in Oklahoma. And there was an article that you had three farmers that went to their local banks and said, will you give us the backing, the loan that we need to buy this land? And because of the market values there, their bank said, yeah, you can go up to $1 million, $1.2 million for this 180 acres. You had a corporate ag investor that came in and bought it for over $4 million. And at that number, there's just no way if a farmer wants to make a profit during his lifetime or even his kid's lifetime that they can make that math work. Well, a corporation can because they're buying it for 100 years from now, 150 years from now. You know, when will it pay off? And so you've got it at every level, even in the processing of food. I mean, you guys read the stories about companies like Tyson, et cetera. They not only tell their farmers that are working for them what they can raise, but how much of it to raise, and That's another big problem that we've got right now, is we've got this siloed production owned by corporate ag, where the market isn't determining what should be raised and sold, but profitability at these companies is determining that. And it's leading to less diversity, you know, in the marketplace, and not more.
But their profits are going up. But the corporate, the corporate profits are going up. And please don't think this isn't happening in Wisconsin. There is an expansion of a dairy operation in northwestern Wisconsin that I have been looking into. And it is owned by a family, Will, which is interesting that you said that. But when I looked a little bit further about who is funding this expansion, there's a hedge fund guy from Louisiana who is kicking in the vast majority of the money for this. So as you said, the family still technically owns it, but they're getting funding from all kinds of outsourced and outstate interests.
Yeah, they've made the transition from a family farm to an investment farm. And, you know, the simple fact is that that's what the system encourages. They want you to get bigger and bigger and bigger, and then eventually your corp. And I'm not talking about the corporatization, like where Will decides to do everything under an LLC so that he's got liability coverage, that kind of thing. I'm just talking about mass corporatization, where the entire production silo is owned by two or three or four different big companies.
Yeah, you know? that's not the way we want to go. Will Westmoreland, check him out on YouTube. His channel is called The Back 40. We would love to have you back, Will. Lots and lots more to talk about. Thank you so very much for your time. Really appreciate it.
You bet. Have a great day, guys.
You as well. News coming up next. Stay with us. You're listening to Matt Nair on air on the vast statewide, countrywide. You can pick us up all around the world if you have the app, the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, and Calvi Tini on the board. Coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine, where you can join us. Call or text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll wrap up the show, as we always do, with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Today it's the Climb Every Mountain edition. Twice. If you ever have a thing you think should not be, send it in to Greg and me at janesays@civicmedia.us. JaneSays, janesays@civicmedia.us. Right now, though, it is time for a little audio sorbet, as we like to say. Lighten things up for a little bit so we can all take a breath away from the news. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It's always controversial. There's always someone who's not happy.
Yes.
And the latest list of the inductees is out, but we wanted to know, who do you think should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame who is not in it yet?
Yeah.
Who do you think is deserving? Do they get a plaque or something?
They get a trophy.
Oh, they get a trophy.
Yeah. It's a nice trophy, too.
Who is deserving of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame trophy who hasn't gotten one yet? 855-752-4842. I have the whole list of previous inductees in front of me.
Previous? Whoa.
Yeah, there's a lot of them, too. But who do you think should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame who is not there yet? 855-752-4842. Greg Bach just bursting over here. Who's not in there? Who you want in there?
Let me start with this, because I'm a diplomatic person and I believe in democracy for all.
Sure.
Everyone who is in the class this year, I think, are deserving. I think everyone in the class this year are amazing contributors. In fact, two of them, actually three of them, I'm surprised it took till 2025 to get in. To me, Chubby Checker, he's one of those guys. He was like part of like the, he sold like 200 million records. He's Edwards at the Twist.
And was it the early days of rock and roll?
Exactly. He's one of those, like, he should have been back in the 90s or late 80s when it first started. So that's surprising to me. Bad Company, not that surprising. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame has kind of been mean to 70s what would be considered stadium rock bands.
That's not fair.
I do totally agree with you. I mean, when if you want to see something amazing, watch Jan Wenner, who runs Rolling Stone and owns this property, announce that Rush is finally in. It's a minute and a half ovation because they had been like the most shunned band. Rush just didn't get in until recently, and people were angry about it. But and Joe Cocker should have been in decades ago.
Absolutely.
So I'm happy. I mean, Cyndi Lauper, awesome.
Well, let's go through the 13 inductees. Yeah. We've got Cyndi Lauper this year, who I adore.
Yes.
Outkast.
Yes.
Warren Zevon.
Yes.
Bad Company. Chubby Checker. Joe Cocker. Soundgarden.
Yes.
White Stripes.
Yeah. Those are good names.
Those are good names.
Yeah. And it's funny, too, because I believe that I think it's still that you have to be eligible, it has to be 25 years since your debut record. So the idea that the White Stripes and Soundgarden and Outkast, you're like, hey, I'm just going to go to watch the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I love the rap music. But there was one on the list for consideration this year that did not get in, even though they received more votes from the fans than any other artist on this list.
Oh, wow.
And that was Phish. Phish has been around since 1980. They released their first record in 83.
I did not know they had been around that long.
Yep. They released their first record in the early 80s. Same four band members since.
That's amazing.
Yeah. They have, and here's the thing is, like, I don't know what the deciding process is, because if you're going to go by album sales, I did some research, and Phish sold about 8 million records total. They've never relied on album sales. They're not an album sales band. But I also looked at the White Stripes, same amount of records. Phish has sold 13.3 million tickets over the past, from 1980 to 2022. That's how they play all the time. And they've played, guess how many times they've played Madison Square Garden?
12.
No.
Higher.
Yeah.
30.
Nope.
Higher than that?
Higher than that.
80.
7. 87 times.
Wow.
So for me, like, I get it. I love Phish is one of my favorite bands. Trey Anastasio, the guitar player, is my favorite guitar player on earth. I love no one more than him. I don't understand from a objective point of view why they didn't make it. Like, what is the voting process? And to me, all of the groups that they brought in have a wide spectrum of art.
Right.
From rock and roll to pop to rap to hard rock. So to me, I don't understand why Phish did not make it in. And I know they'll make it in someday.
Right.
Because actually one of their like most iconic like set pieces has been in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for decades. So I am a little bummed out that they are not part of this. See, I didn't get angry. I'm not mad.
He's
disappointed
in you. He's very disappointed in the people who voted. 855-752-4842. Who should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame that isn't yet? 855-752-4842. Roger from Stevens Point, Three Dog Night, Johnny Rivers, and Herman's Hermits.
None of those are in there?
And I have fond memories of the Herman's Hermits just because they were what my sisters were listening to.
Yeah, yeah.
And when I think of hardcore, you know, they were like the sweet side of rock and roll, right? They were the nice boy you'd bring over and introduce to your mom.
Are the Beatles just too dangerous for you?
No, but the Stones would have been.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Right? Absolutely.
Oh, no. Yeah. I think that's
completely different things.
You have the Herman's Hermits in the far end of the sweet scale.
Yes.
The Beatles are right there. Like,
kind of in the middle.
They're a little raunchy. They're a little sassy.
And they went more so that way.
But Rolling Stones, that's the band that your daughter's going to sneak out of the house to go see.
Exactly. She's not going to introduce them to you.
No. We got a comment from Steve in Milwaukee saying, the White Stripes is surprising. They are much newer. Actually, they're not. They came out with their first record in 1999. They're what's called a first ballot induction. They got through
in the first time.
Yeah, there's no way they were not going to. It's like a band like U2 or Metallica all got in on their first vote.
Who votes on these? They must have a board.
Let's check it out. I believe it's like the Oscars. Like, there are members. So it says, the Rock and Roll Hall class was chosen by about 1,200 music industry executive scholars, former inductees, and critics including the one who, including this one, the person who's writing this. There were 14 artists on the ballot. Voters could support up to 7 nominees. No write-ins are allowed.
Ah,
so you can't be like.
So you have to pick from the nominees they give you.
I love Guar, who should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. But yeah, it seems much like an Oscars or a Grammys type of thing. There is an Academy.
It's an insider thing.
Exactly. So and I
which makes sense.
It makes sense then why Phish wasn't. A lot of people like poo-poo them or don't know them. And White Stripes are and Outkast. Very cool. So you want to be cool.
Yeah, the cool factor going
exactly,
for him.
Exactly, because they're both cool groups. So I don't begrudge them. They should be in there. They're impactful.
855-752-4842. Who would you like to see in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame that isn't in there yet? Jeff from Eau Claire is on the line. Good morning, Jeff. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, good morning. Definitely getting back to that 70s arena rock. Getting snubbed. Styx should definitely be in there.
Okay.
I can't believe Styx isn't in there yet.
A lot of those groups aren't.
That's a good one, Jeff. Yeah. I think they're being unfairly snubbed.
Foreigner, I think, got in last year, and that was after a massive campaign push where Foreigner reached out to modern rock stars and said, hey, why isn't Foreigner in here? You are, like, they're rock and roll. They are rock and roll. Like, all those bands, Styx, Foreigner,
yes.
Those are rock and roll bands.
Bad Company.
Bad Company, yes.
That is the soundtrack to my early teen years.
Yeah.
In the 70s.
To me, that is just like, I mean, I heard someone say it best when it came to like the Rush snubbing was, you know, these insiders and people who vote, they want to be cool and listen to Elvis Costello and David Bowie. And that's fine. Those are both great artists, but you can't discount them. And what happens is they discount them in the immediacy, and then over time, popular opinion says, no, you're wrong. This band is great.
Catch up.
Yeah. Like my dad showed me a Bad Company record when I was a kid and I loved it. You know, so like it's that industry snubbery that happens and you're like, I know Phish will get in.
Eventually.
And I'm not angry. They're fine.
855-752-4842. Who should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame that is not in there yet? And you can leave a comment if you're watching in the live stream. PJ says, I'll be the one who says it. Slayer.
Yep. Slayer, Megadeth, Anthrax should be in there as well as Metallica. Those four bands are called the Big Four. They help revolutionize heavy metal. I can talk about this for hours.
Then I want Hermits in there first.
You can have them. Honestly, I feel like there's a whole host of groups that didn't get in. And then they'll do something where they'll throw them a special artist award. Like, no, I want to be in with them and make the good, fun speech. So, yeah.
Shizu, also on the live stream, I will help throw a toddler tantrum to get Styx in there. I like that, Shizu. Yes, I think, come on.
Yeah, I think that's fair. That's democracy, people.
855-752-4842. Resident young person, Calvin. Who do you think should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame that is not yet?
So I will preface this by saying I'm not necessarily huge fans of these two bands or artists. I don't really know that many of their songs, but I was surprised that the first one, Wu-Tang Clan, is not in there.
Yep.
They kind of feel like they're foundational for rap groups. And then Blink 182, I feel like they were kind of foundational for the pop punk sound of the 90s. So I was kind of surprised they're not in there.
I think those two bands will have their moment in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I'm looking at a list now of people who aren't in here. And there's the B-52s are not in there.
What?
The B-52s are not. Do you know how important they are to like early 80s, especially queer creative music? Like they are important in my opinion. What was the other one I saw? I'm looking at an article now of 145 bands. I won't name them all. Who are not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. What was the...
B-52 should be honored just for coming up with Rock Lobster.
I agree. Thank you, Jane. Someone had to say
that
it.
That in and of itself should get them in there.
Yeah. Blind Faith, which actually would be funny if Blind Faith got in, that would be Eric Clapton's fourth induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Poor Eric.
I know.
Terry on the live stream listening on WAUK Supertramp. Another one.
Yep.
Which was... just a part of my high school years. That's all we listened to was Supertramp and Foreigner.
Mm-hmm. Boston's not in
and
there.
And Boston.
Boston's not. I'm sorry. Boston created one of the greatest debut albums of all time,
yes.
Both in sound and in sales. And you're telling me, come on, man. Come on. And also Phil Collins should be in there as a solo artist.
Absolutely. Well, we will start writing our letter campaign now.
Oh, yeah. We're making this happen.
I'm sure it will make a big difference. And when is this event? I have never watched one of the ceremonies.
November. I think it's in November. Let me check it out here. They were announced this past week, and
November 8th.
And it'll, yeah, it'll probably be sometime early next year then, or later this year.
Rock and Roll Hall of Fame unveiling its latest 13 inductees. Congratulations to Cyndi Lauper, Outkast, Warren Zevon, Mariah Carey, Oasis. You were among the nominees. You're just going to have to wait.
Oasis will get in there.
Just going to have to wait. When we return, we will wrap up the show with Tisbet, otherwise known as This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Today it's the Climb Every Mountain edition. Stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, and the Board Lord coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. Call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Todd Alba will be joining us tomorrow at 9:30, around 9:35. Kick around all the Wisconsin news. There's a lot.
Yeah.
There's absolutely. Always a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And so make sure you join Todd. Also, you can join Todd today, later on today. He has moved. This is week two of our new lineup here in Civic Media. So Pat Kreitlow from 6 until 9. Greg Calvin and I, Matt Nair on air from 9 to 11. Tom Hartman takes over from 11 to 2. Then Todd Alba from 2 to 4. Maggie Dawn, 4 to 6 p.m. And Pete Schwabba stays in his regular slot, Nightlight, from 6 to 8 o'clock. Speaking of Maggie, I'm sure she's going to be... Maggie is an attorney. She was at one point general counsel for Milwaukee County, I believe. And I know she will be doing another update about the arrest of Judge Dugan that happened on Friday at the Milwaukee County Courthouse. So if you're looking for updates on that, and I'm sure Todd will have some of that in his show as well. And I hope you can join us tomorrow.
Yeah. I just want to say really quick, the band that plays our outro song, Jane, Jefferson Starship, also not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
They're not in there yet either.
Jefferson Airplane is, Jefferson Starship is not, nor is Starship. Two-thirds out.
And Liz from Saukville texted in, too. INXS isn't in there yet.
That's a travesty as well.
That is.
We are going to fix this, Jane. You and I are. Calvin, you're on board, too.
Yep. We're gonna storm the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame until our favorite inductees are inducted. Okay. It is time at 11:54, Calvin, for...
This Shouldn't Be a Thing.
As we always say, if you have a thing that should not be, send it in to Greg and me at janesays@civicmedia.us. This from NDTV. Abhinay Singh with the byline headline reads, Chinese man rescued twice in 1 week from Mount Fuji after he returned to get his phone. The man was airlifted the first time while on Mount Fuji, a trail about 3,000 meters above sea level. He had to be rescued twice in the space of a week.
Sorry.
The unnamed 27-year-old has been living in Japan and studying at a university when he decided to climb Mount Fuji, the country's tallest peak, in the off-season. He had to be airlifted the first time while on a trail on Mount Fuji. He became the subject of a second search 4 days later. They just rescued him. They just rescued him. From the side of a mountain. And apparently he didn't think to take his stuff with him when they rescued him the first time.
Well, when you forget your phone, Jane, all bets are off. You have one singular vision. Calvin, I don't know about you, but I know the one thing I'm going to be thinking is, what's on that phone, dude? What's on that phone?
That you need to get that phone back?
Yeah, what's on that phone, bro?
Yeah, he became the subject of a second search 4 days later when he decided to go back to get the stuff he had left behind, including his phone. It remains unclear if he managed to get it back. Rescue officials soon recognized he was the same guy they had just rescued 4 days ago.
He also tried to draw a mustache on his face to try to confuse
people. Mountain rescuers brought him back on a stretcher, handed him over to the fire department. He was suspected of having altitude sickness and was hospitalized. Mount Fuji, by the way, is covered in snow for most of the year. During the summer hiking season, many professionals as well as amateur climbers go up to see the sunrise. The climbing season traditionally starts July 1st and goes through September. Authorities discourage climbers from hiking Mount Fuji during the off season, which is right now, due to the risk of death or injury from harsh conditions.
At the very least, wear your phone around your neck. I don't know.
Well, and there is no follow-up on this, so I don't know if he got charged with anything. You would think they would charge him at least for the cost of the second rescue.
Yeah. Shizu on the live stream says, and I'm going to butcher this, I would say to that man, Bai Zhao Shang, Zai, which is don't do it again.
There you go.
I mean, seriously, you have to be told not to go back to a mountain for your, like he got, yeah.
You just got rescued.
What's on that phone, bro?
And you didn't think to take your stuff with you, so you go back 4 days later, and you have to get rescued again.
Okay. Well, I hope he's in good spirits and healthy. And
I hope so, too. And I hope that he has to pay for it. Because he should.
Yeah.
He should. That wraps up today's episode of
This Shouldn't Be a Thing.
Thank you, Greg and Calvin and all of our engineers. Without you, nothing works. And thank you most of all for calling and for texting and for listening. It really does mean the world. I hope you find some joy today and you have the chance to share it. Keep it right here. News is coming up next on the Civic Media Radio Network. We will see you tomorrow.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.